Welcome to Mastering the Attention Economy Podcast. I'm your host, Ari Lewis. Twice a week, we interview entrepreneurs, executives, and industry leaders on how to break through the noise and capture the audience's attention. Today's guest is Ariel Kimbarovsky. Ariel is a marketing and social media strategist for M1 Finance, a smart money management tool.
Hey, thanks for having me on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks so much for coming on, Ariel. I know we interact a bunch on Twitter, and we've spoken on the phone a few times before. I really enjoyed your Twitter as well as the stuff you're posting at M1 Finance. For those not familiar, can you just describe what M1 Finance is in your role there?
Yeah, so M1 Finance is a personal finance automation platform. So clients can invest, borrow, and spend all in one place. We're built for long-term investors. So you can invest in fractional shares. Trading is free. We have these trading windows that promote long-term investing, and we really focus on that as opposed to some of the trends you see out there. So my role at M1 Finance is I'm a marketing and social media strategist. So I run our organic social, I do all the execution, and then I help out with our promotions, any of our creative needs, our content, our blog, our newsletter. It's a lot. We're a startup, so the marketing team is small but mighty.
Yeah, and that's, I always sort of see this evolution with guests. I'll have guests that are like jack of all trades, and then I have guests who are like, I had a guest the other day who all she does is local PR. That's it. Nothing
wow.
else. So it's really a range of guests, and it's great to interview folks like you to sort of talk about how you stay on top of all these trends. My first question for you that I had is, what's really interesting about your industry and why I wanted to have you on is you're in a regulated industry. So for a lot of folks on their social or on blog content, they can do whatever they want, but you guys can't. Can you talk about some of the challenges you have in creating content in a regulated industry?
Yeah, so this is actually my first time working in a regulated industry. So I didn't really even know what I was walking into when I started, but essentially there are these rules that FINRA and different financial regulators have that say, if you're sending this to more than 20 people, you need someone with a specific license to look it over. And so we have a compliance team that checks over everything. And so one of the tough parts about it is, okay, well, what counts as sort of that static content that goes out to more than 20 people, and what's interactive content that goes out to less? So it's working with our compliance team to make sure that they're able to check over all of our content, but also to make sure that we can still move quickly, right? Especially on organic social, it's tough because if you need every tweet approved, you're going to slow down and you're going to miss out on some really great moments that you might be able to comment on or engage with. And so there's some flexibility that I've been able to work out as I sort of got started, learned the industry more, spent a long time reading all the regulatory stuff that's a little boring, but it's helped me earn the trust of my team so that I can kind of do what I need to do.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And when you talk about, posting content, do you have like a compliance person that like you need to run content by before you post? Are they, you post something and then you're getting a frantic call, why did you post this? We're going to get in trouble. What does that process look like?
So I luckily haven't gotten the frantic, why did we post this call? And it's never mean, right? I mean, luckily the culture at M1 is so friendly that if there was ever a misstep, I'm sure I would get a Slack saying, hey, can we take this down? It's not compliant. But we do have a compliance manager that looks over the content. Not all of the social content. There are some quirks in the rules that count some of the social content as interactive. And so regulators see it as a one-to-one conversation, and I can kind of use my best judgment. But everything does ultimately get reviewed and kept for, I think, 3 years. And so at some point, someone's going to see everything, and they may question it, they may ask. So it's just about knowing those rules and knowing when you can push the buttons and where that line is.
Got it. That makes a ton of sense. And yeah, I could definitely imagine like there must be, when you were posting in your previous roles, it was much more of a free feeling. Oh, I posted this, I enjoyed it. And now you're not just wondering, oh, is this good engaging content, but is this legal content? I posted on Twitter before this, some questions that people had, and I actually wanted to bring one of them up because I thought it was very relevant to sort of, you know, the conversation and what we're segging into. So you talked about like content creation. What does your creative process look like? You know, how are, you know, because I know you handle writing, but you also handle, you know, sometimes design. How do you think about that and develop your processes around that?
Yeah, so I batch my creative process because I do so many different aspects of creative. I will put aside some time to say, okay, I'm going to do all of the creative writing that I have to do right now. Then I'm going to do all of the design and art direction that I have to do. Then I'm going to do any of sort of the creative messaging or ideating around a promotion, or if I have to help out with some of the strategy, like that creative part of the strategy. I batch it so that I'm not confusing my creative, because what that does is it helps me say, okay, I need to go find some inspiration. I need to flood my brain with creative things, and I'm looking in those mediums. I'm not looking in the industry, but I'm looking in the medium. So for creative writing, I'm looking at books, I'm looking at poems, I'm looking at probably tons of old ads. I'm looking at all of those things. And I'm not necessarily looking at the same thing when I'm thinking about design or when I'm thinking about the creative part of a strategy.
Got it. And you know, on that note, when you're talking about, you know, these brand guidelines and visual brand guidelines, do you guys have formal, like, both visual and non-visual brand guidelines, and like, here are the colors you are supposed to use, here's the font? Is that constantly evolving as a startup? You know, how are you thinking about that and developing those types of things?
Yeah, so we do. We have our brand guidelines with our colors. Those were revamped just before I got on board. My manager did them. She's the creative lead at M1. She's amazing. And so she built all of that out. And so right now, what we're really trying to refine is our voice. So that's something that I'm working on. We're developing sort of this internal voice guide as we think about, okay, we have our client support team. We have our client development team, which is kind of like a sales team. We have our website. We have our blog. We have our newsletter. Now we have Twitter, Instagram, Reddit, right? We've got all of these things in play. We've got our employer branding on LinkedIn. And so that voice needs to sort of evolve. And we don't want to be like your average bank, right? That's not our goal.
Got it. Yeah. And I would imagine like you have to really be bold with the type of, you know, guidelines and branding that you're putting out, because like, I think of a Chase, I think of a Wells Fargo, and like, they're boring. But now you have, right, what's the term? It's neobank. Is that the term that's sort of being used? Where, you know, I use a bank, I use Aslo and Novo for some of my banking, which I know are neobanks, and they, you know, they try to be mobile first, and they try to, you know, how do you balance sort of that, oh, we want to be a neobank, a newer bank, but we also need to have that legacy. So like the more established customers think of us as, you know, a legitimate bank, we can compete at the level of a Chase or a Wells Fargo.
Yeah. So, I mean, luckily, because we're not really a bank, we have a bank partner, we're not a bank, and so that's kind of how our spend, our high yield checking, comes into play. But yeah, I mean, those investment brokerages, those banks, they all do have some duller guidelines, I guess. We like to play into some of the color. We have dark tones, we have brighter colors, we have a lot of illustrations, we have that flat illustration style. It's pretty popular, but we keep within our color palette to keep it unique, and that gives us a lot of flexibility. As a small team, when we're churning out content, we need to be able to churn out a lot, we need to be able to test a lot, and so keeping one style gives us a lot of leverage into, okay, let's play with people, let's play with non-people, let's play with icons. So we can do all of those things, and then really punching up the copy to be more human and more relatable, because we don't think that your personal finance or investing app needs to sound like a brokerage. We think that it could sound the same way that you would want a friend to sound if you went, okay, I'm trying to figure out my financial plan, I'm investing in stocks, what do you think? What are you doing?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So on things like, you know, you talked about, you know, you doing social strategy, what are sort of the ways you're capturing the attention of your audience to make sure, one, that content is unique and differentiated, but also, you know, complying with regulation?
So one thing that we're really leaning into is all about the mindset. So what that helps us do is instead of doing sort of what every other brokerage or bank does, which is trends, what stocks are people investing in? What's the market doing today? Right? All of those things, which sure, we do a little bit of that, right? Because it's important. Our investors obviously care. But we're leaning into the mindset, and so that helps us talk to productivity experts. That helps us talk to people that are thinking about health and fitness and taking those frameworks and applying them to investing. So one thing that we're actually launching is we're launching a newsletter, and so it comes out next week. And one of our first topics is all about ownership. And ownership is a mindset, and it's based off of the book Extreme Ownership by Jocko Willink and Leif Babin, which is a leadership book. So it's not your typical connection, but it's one that focuses on long-term and habits and sort of all of those things that are a slightly different angle, and so that people can really understand our purpose and why we're here.
So, one of the things that you touched on there was sort of personalities and individuals. Do you guys engage in like influencer marketing? And additionally, maybe not influencer marketing per se, but like, are you guys doing affiliates? I see that a lot with neobanks where, hey, sign up, you get $10 in your account. Is that something you all are doing, or something you've shied away from?
We have an incredible affiliate network. It is, I think, just over a year old. One of my team members has built this incredible channel of a range of affiliates that have big audiences, small audiences, medium audiences, kind of in their own niche sectors, mainly focused on personal finance, starting to branch out into some of those other areas like productivity. We don't necessarily do specific influencer marketing yet. They're currently affiliates, but it's something that we're starting to work on. We're starting to think about as we grow and as people become fans of M1, we'll get DMs from people saying, hey, I just started a YouTube channel and my first video was talking about how much I love M1 and showing off the pies, which are kind of the way we organize portfolios. And it's awesome to see.
So, and I don't want to ask you about the affiliate program per se because it's not your job, but something that I think is tangential is that, what happens if someone is posting something that, they're an affiliate and it's a bad thing, it's negative or like, and it's not meant to be negative or there's some controversy. Have you had to deal with that being the social lead and being that front line of, those types of crises? And even if it's not that, have you had to deal with some crisis of, some big person complaining about M1 Finance, how do you deal with that? How do you think about that?
Yeah, so I don't think we've had an affiliate or a quote unquote celebrity or big influencer post something negative. For the most part, there are so many ways to contact us and there's a direct channel, right? So if they have a problem, they get in touch and we go, okay, we're on it. We're going to solve it. We're going to fix it for you. Let's work through this together. There are people that obviously complain. Some people will make a splash. There's always someone that's frustrated about something you do, especially in a regulated industry where it's not like you're buying shoes, right? Anyone with, $40 can go buy the shoes with a credit card. And with investing and with finance, there are some eligibility requirements you might have to meet. And so if you don't meet them and you're frustrated because you were so excited to try the platform, we feel sorry, but there's not a lot we can do. And sometimes people get mad. And so I've had people take a screenshot of the DM I sent as, as M1 commenting as myself, but just explaining the situation and they'll post it. And typically, because we try to handle everything with empathy and understanding, but also that clear cut, here are the rules, here's why things are happening. When other people see that, they see that it's just someone frustrated. I think the challenge is when brands respond from a non-authentic place or from a non-empathetic place, because the person yelling at you on the other end or unhappy is a person. They're a real human.
Yeah, and I think that's something that, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. I don't think people invest enough in social, and it's something that's deprioritized. I've seen a lot of conversations on Twitter and a lot of conversations I've had on the podcast of, we need to have a chief social officer or some type of like C-suite or senior person that's head of social, but that matters to the company, right? That like is really being valued. What are your thoughts? It sounds like M1 invests a lot in social and thinks of it as important, but what would you be telling, companies or people that are listening to the podcast, why social is such an important investment for their brand and why they need to care more about it?
Social is your fastest way to talk to someone right now. Everyone is spending time on social, right? Everyone has their own channel preferences, but it's the fastest way. And so one of the biggest problems is that companies see social as sort of this bulletin board of all of their announcements, right? They're going to push everything to social, and then people don't engage, they don't really care, and then the company says, oh, social doesn't work. I can't build anything off of it, right? It happens a lot in B2B. I actually worked in B2B for a while, and I constantly got, well, you can't really sell through B2B. And my counter is, but the person signing the contract is a human. They're on social doing other things, right? They're paying attention to other people. They're just not paying attention to you because you're not interesting to them at the moment. You're not telling a story. You're not interacting like a person. And there's such a power in building those connections because you can start doing things like building word of mouth. You can start listening and really understanding what are people saying behind closed doors, right? You might not get that through email. You can't see someone's email chain when they're talking about you. You can see that on social. You can react to things quickly. You can form connections with other brands too, because who's managing a brand account? There's a person. And so suddenly they're an influencer for that partnership. Even if they're not the decision maker for your engineering partnership, they could easily send an email or a Slack message and say, hey, this company has been interacting. They have this cool content. We should totally get in touch. Can I connect you? That happens all the time. And it's a great way to build those connections. And so I think that's where companies miss the boat, is that no matter what your business is, you're in the people business. Because without people, you don't have a company, no matter what you're doing. You need someone with a credit card on the other end, and all of those people are in one place. You're just not tapping into it.
I love that answer, and I love, that people business comment. So, I guess to add to that question, how do you ensure that the narratives and the storytelling is aligned across your organization, right? It sounds like you really know the values that M1 Finance has, but say you have like just an ops person or someone who isn't, doing social, but like maybe they're posting on an individual basis and they say something wrong. How do you make sure that your company's bought in, that the company knows about the narratives, is doing the branding? Do you guys have, monthly meetings to discuss social as a team? Like, are you sending them the brand guidelines? What are you all doing to stay prepared on that front?
So this is something that we're working on. This is a major work in progress at M1 because we're growing quickly. And so that means you're adding people, and you've got a lot of layers here, right? We've got the regulated industry layer, which specifically for M1 makes it tricky for all of our employees to be on social. So for example, our CEO isn't really on social, right? And so that's not even a viable channel for us to push through, because there's a lot of quirks that come with him being on social, and that's just not something that he wants to get into. It's more complicated than necessary, but there's a ton of other people. And so internal marketing is something that's really important. One thing that the company does is we have this thing called Demo Day at the end of every month. And every department gets 15 to 20 minutes to sort of present what they've been working on. We typically include some sort of social or brand update, right? Here's what we're doing in content. Here's what we're doing. Here are some of the tweets that worked best. And so we try to get people really excited about, share it. Another thing that we have is we have our public mentions channel in Slack. And so our tweets go in there. And then sometimes I'll share some of the social content that doesn't go in there. And so once we started revving up our content, we kind of let the company organically start seeing what would happen. And I would get Slack messages like, this made me laugh. I didn't even know we could be funny. Or, oh, this was such a smart comment. I thought we can't give advice, but you found a way to not do that and just comment on something in an intelligent way. And so once people start seeing that we're putting output and they're getting excited, I kind of grab onto that and I start sharing more of, hey, this is what we're doing. We're working on that internal voice guideline too. And so we'll be doing a training with our support team. So retraining for existing members and then adding that to our onboarding And then we're constantly trying to build out ways of how do we hype up a launch? How do we get the company so excited that they want to post about it, or at the very least, they want to talk to their friends about it?
So my last question that I always like to ask guests is, if you're starting at M1, day one today, knowing what you know now, what's like one lesson you've learned or one thing you'd do differently?
I feel like one thing that I would have done is I would have been more aggressive with my personal social earlier. I would have not just built up that audience, but built up those connections. Something that I did was I discovered the value of my personal social at the same time I really started to find my niche in building a brand on social. I'd done it before, but sort of not at this speed. And so I really wish I had done that because I've met so many incredible people and I've learned so much and made all these connections and gotten inspired that I wonder how that could have shaped how I've built sort of where I'm at now. So that parallel learning has been cool, but I wonder if it would have been step by step how that would have changed.
Yeah, and we met through Twitter, so great
Yeah.
example. So yeah, thanks Ariel so much for coming on. Really appreciate it. For those looking to connect with you or connect with M1 Finance, where can they find you all?
Yeah, so you can find me on Twitter at Ariel Kimbar. You can find me on LinkedIn if you Google my name, Ariel Kimbarovsky, but I'm probably easier to find on Twitter. And then you can find M1 at M1 underscore finance on Twitter and then on Instagram. We're also on LinkedIn and Facebook, but I think our Twitter and Instagram are more fun.
Got it. Well, thanks again so much for coming on. Those links will be in the description. And until next time, everyone.
Thanks, Ari.